Well, Malcolm Turnbull will get set for his first meeting with President Trump. He'll be in New York later next week. I think it's fair to say the PM has a bit of a spring in his step, sort of. This week's news poll showed the coalition two-party preferred. That's jumped from 48 to 52 from, what was it a while ago? Was it 45-55? So that's a pretty significant improvement. Now, to be sure, the Conservatives have lost virtually every news poll since last July's federal election. Still, it's an improvement, and it comes after the PM's announcements on tougher citizenship rules and a tightening of the visa system for foreign workers, as well as this week's decision, of course, to introduce export control powers to safeguard Australia's domestic gas supplies. To discuss all this and other political issues from the week, let's hear from our Sunday roundtable. Ben Oquist is the Executive Director of the Australia Institute in Canberra and a former Chief of Staff to Greens leader Bob Brown. G'day, Ben. Great to have you on the program again.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Patricia Forsyth is Executive Director of the Sydney Business Chamber and a former New South Wales Liberal Parliamentarian. Hi there, Patricia.
Hi, Tom.
And Terry Barnes is a political consultant and former Liberal Party advisor. G'day, Terry.
G'day, Tom.
Ben, the country's on the verge of becoming the world's largest LNG exporter, yet we face gas shortages at home. Is Malcolm Turnbull right to say this is ridiculous?
Yeah, it's been a long time coming. Actually, the Australia Institute put out a report cooking up a price rise in gas in 2013, warning exactly this would happen. We built massive gas export facilities in Gladstone, and our gas price was always going to go to the export parity price. The warnings had been around for a long time. At the same time as the government announced this dramatic intervention into the gas market, and it is a reversal of what the Howard government did. They removed the export controls when Warwick Perrow was the minister in 1998. And it is a kind of anti-free market intervention, and it signals a kind of shift in the economic policy orthodoxy. But it has been a long time coming. And at the same time as the government's announced that, they've quietly shelved their review into the PRRT. That's the mechanism by which we collect a profits-based tax on gas in Australia, because it's been underperforming. Australia is set to become the world's biggest exporter, the world's biggest, bigger than Qatar in 2021. Mm. And in 2021, Qatar is going to rake in $27 billion in royalties. And the estimates in Australia is that we are going to take in $800 million. So there's been something wrong in our gas policy for quite some time, both in what Australians get for their gas and how much gas Australia is allowed to use in Australia. And the intervention is as a result of really a failure in policy for over a decade, when a lot of people have seen this coming.
So it is limiting gas exports, Terry. That's perceived as a radical idea. Isn't that contradicting free market thinking, which is what the Liberal Party should be about?
Well, it is, Tom, but as Ben was just saying, this is a problem that's been a decade in the making, and really past the parcel has stopped and the parcel has landed firmly in the Prime Minister's lap. Now, it's really, I think, a question here that Malcolm Turnbull and the government have seen that there is another priority, as well as making export dollars and using our natural resources to make them. That is actually to ensure that there is a sufficient and affordable energy supply in Australia for Australian households, for Australian businesses, for Australian industry to develop and grow, and that hard steps need to be taken to make sure that at least we have enough in stock to actually meet our own needs. It's look, the way I see it is, it's a free market decision. It's a poor one. As a political decision, recognising voters are hurting about this, Malcolm Turnbull, for the first time perhaps, is showing that he's a politician, not just a businessman.
But Patricia, industry leaders this week used words like unprecedented, alarming, sovereign risk in response to the Prime Minister's announcement. What's your position on all this?
Well, yes, they did. And I think sovereign risk is one of those issues. But on the other side, we also said, so people in business said, certainty. And you've got to be able to give some certainty into the market, into business. It is ironic that for a nation that is doing so well in terms of our resources, it's a resource-rich nation, that we at home are at great risk of not having adequate energy to be able to guarantee supply to business, guarantee supply to households. Mm. you take New South Wales alone, and it would be comparable for every other state. There's over 30,000 businesses that rely on gas. There's over 1 million households that rely on gas. So it wasn't Malcolm Turnbull and his government's fault that we are where we are today. It's been an extraordinary failure of public policy over a period of time. But at this point, someone had to solve it. And to his credit, at least he confronted the energy companies first and gave them an option to work through some of the challenges.
And has this policy been likely to get broad bipartisan policy? Because there seems to be a consensus on this panel that all things considered, this is a good thing.
Well, interestingly, I heard Matt Canavan this morning talking about it as not a...
The coalition minister from Queensland.
Yep. Yeah, the Minister for Resources saying it wasn't the long-term solution. It was just a short-term, essentially a short-term fix. It's not going to solve the problems. All the government is suggesting is that maybe we can hold gas prices to export parity, not keep them to where they once were at $3 or $4, more like, you know, 10 or 15. So it's not a long-term solution to the issue, and the government is itself admitting it. The reality is that the gas industry has had too much political power in Australia. The export gas industry in particular has held too much political power, and it means we haven't got a fair return for our gas in a tax sense, and the government shelving that PRRT review is a mistake. It should have been brought forward in this budget, because if we're going to have such a large gas industry, the taxpayer needs a return. Overall, of course, in the long term, there will have to be a transition away from fossil fuels if Australia is to meet its own targets that it's agreed to in Paris.
Well, Laurie Oakes, the distinguished veteran Canberra Press Gallery journalist, had a column in the News Limited Press yesterday, and he said that this announcement by the Prime Minister should make him a winner, after all, forcing producers to reserve gas supplies for the domestic market. That's all about ensuring Australians get the benefit of their own resources. That was Oakes's line. But Oakes also argued, Terry, that it's too bad Turnbull can't sell his policy. And on Talkback Radio this week, according to Oakes, the Prime Minister was just hopeless in addressing listeners' feelings. He waffled and waffled, according to Oakes. Question, is the PM himself too full of gas?
Well, actually, I think that if you could actually capture the hot air above Parliament House in Canberra, we would actually solve our problems overnight. But look, I think the Prime Minister he's a very mellifluous person at the best of times. And as we were saying before we came on, I mean, his time as a barrister is probably paid by the minute and as a journalist by the word. So he's used to a way of doing things. But when it comes down to retail politics, it's simple cut-through messages. And frankly, I think Tony Abbott still has it all over Malcolm Turnbull in regards to that. And with this particular one, it does remind me of what Paul Keating said about the GST and John Hewson. If you don't understand it, don't vote for it.
That's interesting. Yeah, well, Patricia, according to Oakes, quote, whatever is said, Trump is a master persuader. Turnbull, to put it mildly, is not. A waffler, the PM?
Well, I certainly think that he, perhaps the slogans of previous prime ministers has put him off. But there's not there's not a single slogan or a group of words that you could say represents what he stands for. And I think that's the problem that he has.
I suppose, Ben, you'd probably quip that he doesn't really have a good message to sell anyway.
Well, interestingly, you talked about that polling earlier. There was quite a lot of talk about that latest news poll, and the coalition's primary vote had jumped from 36% to 36%. So they're a long way off where they need to win the next election.
It's a good point you made, because we all too often talk about this two-party preferred voting, but really when it comes to these opinion polls, it's really the primary voting, isn't it, Ben?
It is. And I think overall the Prime Minister faces this problem is that he's had to move to the right to shore up that right flank. And those reports I found most interesting recently, that Morrison had been told he couldn't have his housing package unless it had been ticked off by Dutton. Dutton, not an economic minister, has kind of been given this kind of right-wing veto inside the cabinet to kind of shore up Turnbull's support. Now, the problem with this is every time Turnbull does this in a seemingly move to gain internal support or some kind of support to stop the rise of One Nation, he shreds his credibility. He's seen to be not what he once was. So on the one hand, he seemed to stave off One Nation or Dutton or Abbott, but on the other hand, bigger picture, he shreds some credibility, and I think that kind of ultimately jars with voters.
And some people might say that explains his decision to strengthen the citizenship laws. Patricia, is the PM right, though, when he says proficiency in English will actually improve migrants' job prospects? Isn't that an obvious thing to say?
Yes, it is, but more than that, unlike most other countries, we put a civic duty on our citizens in that we require them to vote. And I think coming with that requirement to vote is an expectation that they have an understanding of the message, an understanding of what they're doing. And that fundamentally means you're going to have to be able to speak or understand, communicate in English. Because unlike almost every other country, we do require that they do that. So I think if, by putting it up front within your citizenship requirement, it fits with what we require as the civic duty of citizens.
And Labor, meanwhile, or some Labor MPs have said this is dog whistling. The Greens have called it patronising. Your response to that, Terry? I mean, after all, you could argue that what Turnbull has put forward in these citizenship tests are not that different from what John Howard put forward a decade earlier.
Well, I think that's right.
So why did he do it then?
I really think it's actually time that somebody from the centre redefined the conversation so that we're actually talking about what are mainstream Australian values, what do we actually stand for as a community, as a society, what is acceptable and what is unacceptable. And it's not just a question of religion, it's not just a question of race or politics, it's a question of what makes us decent human beings living in the most decent country in the world. And too often, and I think particularly in the last couple of years, the debate has been hijacked by the extremes of left and right, and the sensible centre has not been speaking up for itself. So I actually welcome the fact that the Prime Minister has actually intervened in this debate. But I think the other side of it, just quickly, Tom, is that we haven't had a serious conversation about immigration and our whole immigration program since Stephen Fitzgerald did a review for the Hawke government in the late 1980s.
That's right. Yeah, 30 years ago almost.
And this is just part of a wider set of issues that really need to be confronted. I mean, we talk about stopping the boats, we talk about refugees, but we don't talk about our mix of migrants, the skill sets we want to have, the ability to absorb them. I mean, these are all parts of the conversation of which values is simply one bit.
But Ben, on these citizenship tests, I mean, it's not as if Australia is alone in moving in this direction, right? I mean, other Western democracies are casting aside the old mantra that it doesn't matter whether citizens have a sense of allegiance to their nation and its institutions. So Turnbull, in many respects, is just reflecting a global trend, right?
Well, I think English language, for example, and integration and having good levels of literacy are really important to citizenship. But I think there's a fear, and I was struck by Christina Keneally's column in this space, that maybe these...
This is Christina Keneally, the former New South Wales Premier who writes for The Guardian.
Yeah, herself a relatively new Australian citizen, and she wrote quite a personal, powerful column. And while she said, of course, English is important, integration is important, we need to ensure that, these moves are much more likely to stoke fear and instill suspicion, and I think potentially stoke division. Now, if we are concerned about levels of literacy as they affect citizenship, you would expect in this budget a huge new injection to improve literacy levels overall. There's some figures suggest that 40% or more of Tasmanians are not adequately literate. And I think literacy is important in a democracy. As Patricia was alluding to, we have compulsory voting in Australia. And for citizens to be active and effective and full participants, English is really important. So, but it's not just for new migrants. And I think there's an underlying worry that what the government is actually doing is stroking suspicion and division rather than actually encouraging people to fully participate as citizens. Just a quick one on the English language test, and there are unintended or intended consequences too. The English language test, I saw an interesting statistic in the wake of that move, is that you are seven times more likely to pass that citizenship test if you are Indian rather than Chinese. Now, is that an intended or unintended consequence? And the reality is a lot of people who are great citizens of Australia would not have passed such a test if it was put to them 10, 20, 40, 50 years ago.
If you've just tuned in, you're on Sunday Extra here on RN. I'm Tom Switzer, and I'm with Patricia Forsyth, Terry Barnes and Ben Oquist. Scott Morrison's pre-budget talk about good and bad debt. Here's the Treasurer this week.
But I think the principle is pretty clear. I mean, if you're investing in things that boost productive capacity, like infrastructure, like energy infrastructure in particular, then obviously they are assets which return and pay for themselves over time. But if you're borrowing money to spend on everyday expenditure, then in your own household experience, you know that doesn't end well. I mean, in the past, people have said, all debt's bad. Well, there is some debt investment. There is some debt that you can acquire that can actually pay for itself over time when you invest it in things that boost productivity, that grow the economy in particular, that have an income stream that come back on them.
That was Treasurer Scott Morrison, Liberal Treasurer, on how good and bad debt will now be interpreted. Terry, your thoughts? Debt can be good.
The Treasurer said that the principle is clear. When you borrow, so is the interest. I think all debt is bad one way or another, in the sense that it has to be paid for, whether it's a payback or whether it's with interest. And that's something that I think was lost in the Treasurer's comments. On the other hand, I think he does have a point there. You can borrow for worthwhile nation-building infrastructure causes and actually get a long-term return from that, in return for that borrowing and interest. But when it comes to talking about credit card debt, for instance, I think the real message here is it's not a question of what you're borrowing, it's a question of what you're paying for. And I think I'd like to see on Tuesday week that the Treasury is also showing a recommitment to budget repair, actually finding savings, actually finding efficiencies that means that we can actually live within our means.
Patricia, you're not a supporter of bad debt, but I take it you're a supporter of good debt?
Well, I think debt is debt, but there is no doubt, and clearly this is about positioning for the budget, but infrastructure, that is nation building, that is, and not all infrastructure is equal, but there is certainly some infrastructure that is going to improve our productivity, improve efficiency, deal with issues around congestion, all of those sort of things. There is some things that will provide a long-term return into the economy. So I get where he's coming from, but it shouldn't be an excuse just to spend. And I'm not sure yet how it's going to be reviewed in the context of our AAA rating, how the ratings organisations will see the debt.
You know, times have changed, though. I mean, for many years, and with the exception of Anthony Albanese, I think when he was immigration minister, good South Sydney fan, Albo. But for many years, it was almost sacrosanct for a minister or a shadow minister and talk about debt as anything other than bad. So, Ben, why the apparent change for Morrison talking about debt as an investment?
Well, it's great. He's caught up with reality. The Reserve Bank of Australia under this governor, Philip Lowe, and Glenn Stevens, the previous one, the OECD, the IMF, have all said we need extra debt while interest rates are at record lows, to build the infrastructure that our cities need, as Patricia was alluding to. Our infrastructure hasn't kept pace with population growth in Australia. It is a major shift for the Treasurer to have effectively abandoned the debt and deficit hysteria. He's caught up with economic orthodoxy, but I think it kind of once and for all slays that idea that debt in itself is bad. Sometimes it's good, actually. I mean, people know that to buy their house, it's good to have a debt and buy a house, and the same goes for building infrastructure. But, of course, does depend on what you spend it on. And of course, the government is keen to start re-talking about debt, given it's gone from $153 billion in 2013 and is heading to $363 billion by 2019. But of course, it does depend on what you spend it on. There's good debt, there's bad debt, and then there's really ugly debt. And I hope it's not a mask to put in the $1 billion loan for the Carmichael Adani mine in Queensland.
Ben.
That's the big worry.
Now, listen, I was going to say, talking about debt, one prominent political figure who has no problem with debt is the President of the United States, Donald Trump. He's in the process of slashing income and company tax rates. He wants to increase infrastructure spending. And, of course, the Prime Minister is going to meet the President later next week. Terry, what do you make of all this?
Well, I think it's good that the Prime Minister is going to meet the President. And from what he said himself, he's going to get a few tips on company tax cuts. But look, I think after the awful phone call he had with Donald Trump in February, to go hightail it the week before the budget, halfway around the world for a short face-to-face meeting with the President of the United States, who bullied him. I just think it's a very bad look, frankly. I think he should just stick at home and focus on his knitting.
Okay, well, Terry Barnes, Patricia Forsyth, Ben Oquist, thanks so much for being on Sunday Extra this morning.
Thanks very much, Tom.
And thanks so much to all of you for listening to the program this morning. I hope you're enjoying your weekend. All our stories are available online in case you missed one or want to listen to it again. Just head to the RN website and scroll down to Sunday Extra in the program section. Enjoy the rest of your day and please join me again on Sunday Extra next week. It's always great having your company. And remember, if it's Sunday, it's Sunday Extra. I'm Tom Switzer. Bye for now.